Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts. We got a Bellator show to cover, a UFC show to cover, the latest news to cover, and we'll talk to one of the bright stars in the UFC, Peyton Talbot, who just got a win this past Saturday over Cameron Simon. And he's a Vegas guy originally. Now he lives up north. It says Reno. Yeah, it says Reno there on his Tapology, but I'm seeing some training footage and stuff like that with the guys from Team Alpha Male and MMA Gold. So that's pretty cool. I always get excited about new prospects, and he's a real fun one to watch. Plus, all right. I want to come clean. I made some money off the kid, so there you go. All right, we'll be right back to start the show. Here's the thing, Goes, and I'm going to tell him this too. Uh-oh. He has heavy hands. He has a lot of weapons. In fact, I was studying up on him because we're going to interview him, Peyton Talbot. And it looks like he can just play any sport. Like, he's really talented. You see him on a skateboard. You see him in the ocean. You see him playing football, wrestling. But, man, he leaves that chin out a little bit. That Simon guy's not bad. Keep an eye on that kid from South Africa. He's DDP's teammate. A lot of people thought he was going to win. I think he's good. His chin was almost too good for his own well-being because Talbot is heavy-handed. And I'm glad the ref stopped it. I think it was Tyone. I really enjoyed that fight. Might have been the one I enjoyed the most on Saturday night, but I'm high on Talbot.
There were a couple of those stoppages where you were getting really close to that threshold. You know, it must have been tough on the refs, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because you could just tell the actual Donkey Kong punch or kick, something was going to come and just completely lay someone out. Then you're talking about 6 to 9 months recovery and. Mm-hmm. You don't want that. You know, sometimes you can just tell when someone's headed towards an L. Now, look, it wasn't for a title or anything. And yes, all fights are important. Health shouldn't matter. But, you know, I think all this comes into play, into the equation. So Simon can still come back and be a factor in mixed martial arts. But I think Hillbrain will thank the referee one day that it wasn't worse. Because, I mean, this dude.
For sure.
He got kneed really, really bad. And you could just, the mics, man, they were just picking up all the thwacks and the slaps and the cracks. And dude, it was a violent fight.
You have to, at some point, touch certain areas of your body, you know, and feel what it feels like when you touch it. And then just imagine the force that has to come to make that noise on that particular body part. Dude, that is like life altering. Strikes that are hitting you. I mean, bones are gonna break. It's awful. Lately I've been they've been putting that thing out too, like turn up the volume on this one. You know, you turn up and you just go, Jesus. However loud this sounds here, it was louder there. You know, that's gotta be something.
We'll get into the results in just a sec. Some big fights happened this weekend. I usually like to lead off with that, but I guess since we went down this road and we're talking about fighter safety, did you see what Macy Barber went through?
I just saw that after we did spinning back clip. That's
crazy.
That was sad.
Yeah. All the way up to pneumonia. Like, she was in the hospital, thought she had staph, 105 degree fever. They couldn't get rid of it. Pneumonia turned into, and antibiotics. I'm thinking, you know, that almost sounds like it could happen to anyone.
It's I know that when it comes to temperatures, I think it's like once you get past 103, you're really pushing the line, like as far as brain damage and stuff like that. Like, your body's just not equipped to handle that. And yeah, to see something get that bad, like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's crazy. we wish the best for her. She's one of my favorite fighters too. I really enjoy watching Macy Barber fight. And I thought it was one of those too soon athletes. I think she, I always tell the story. She was under 20. Her manager at the time, or can't remember who, would pitch her or the UFC to come to the studio at Mandalay Bay. And we had to politely decline because she was under 21. Mm-hmm. And we figured, ah, we'll have time. And then she kind of blew up. I'm sure a lot of people asked for her time. And we finally did get an interviewer last year's International Fight Week. That was cool. But then she had a knee injury. And then she had a couple L's, and everyone was like, ah, so much for you beating John Jones's record, and so much for the future. And now she's turning it around, dude. She's a mean chick.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one thing you can't doubt when it comes to Macy Barber is she's going to come in prepared, and she's going to give you your best.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go in order of how it went down. We had a Bellator show on Friday. Bellator Championship Series is what they're calling it now, as they're part of the PFL. And at the top of the bill, we had Corey Anderson versus Carl Moore. We spoke to both fighters before their fights in Northern Ireland, Belfast, right? And both of them were ready to go. Just Moore was the lesser known of the two, but he's from Belfast, or yeah, Belfast, Northern Ireland. I'm not sure if he's actually from Belfast, but he's from Northern Ireland. So this is going to be a big home game for him. And anyway, he represented, right? But Anderson took the decision home. This is his third time fighting for a world title. And he was successful. And you could just tell how much it meant to him to have a major belt, you know, as the crowning achievement of his career.
I thought that fight was so interesting because, you know, even like when Corey was stuck in that arm bar, that looked bad, dude. He looked like he was seconds from tapping. You could just see his arm getting bent, but he roughed through it and he got out of it. So like there were moments, and, you know, the crowd was getting loud. They were getting into it. It's just one of those gutsy performances that gets you a win over a guy that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to really look at that particular skin on his wall and say, wow, look at that. But he's a lot tougher than I think most people give him credit.
Yeah, I'm looking at his wins, right? You know, he's always going to get the shaft a little bit because he left the UFC to go to Bellator. And of course, along with that will come the whole B League thing or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But look at what he's done in his career. He's beaten Phil Davis. He's worn a major belt. Ryan Bader, he's worn multiple major belts. Melvin Manhoff's more of a name. I don't know that he was as accomplished of a MMA fighter as he was a kickboxer, right? But he's beaten Johnny Walker. Eler Latifi, both respected, right? Glover Teixeira, he's worn a major belt. Patrick Cummins was a tough out back in the day. Sean O'Connell calls fights for PFL now. He beat him in the UFC. Sean O'Connell won a major belt. He was a PFL champion once. Tom Lawler, Fabio Maldonado, Jan Blachowicz goes. Like, that's not a bad, that's not a shabby career, you know? Now throw in the Ultimate Fighter Season 19 winner. Like, that dude should be proud of himself, man.
That's a really good career. And you feel like there's still gas left in the tank. So he could still even pad onto that a little bit more. And I like that he's going to have fresher matchups now, different guys to prepare for. So we'll see. But look, man, as much as I love Corey, to say you're the best light heavyweight in the world, is you got to have some stones to say that, man, because there's just a lot of different cats that have different fight sets, you know, and that's really, really tough. But I will give him this. Put him in against anyone, and he has a chance.
Well, the Blachowicz win was about 9 years ago. And when he used to kind of say it a while back after he beat, you know, he had gone through, let me see, Manhoff, one of those Eastern European guys, Dovlatson, Yagomets Vorov or something like that. But Bader, right? Bader was accomplished. And so when you can say, hey, I've beaten Bader in the Grand Prix and I own a win over two former champs, Blachowicz and Teixeira, that goes a long way, you know, but we're also like 4 or 5 years removed from that. Now, to say it now, it's a little tougher because we've moved on from that. We've moved on from Jones, but we've also moved on from Blachowicz and Teixeira. And, you know, we're in a new era now. Since then, we've had, what, Jiří Procházka and Jamal Hill wear the gold. So he can still say it. It's just from the standpoint of just, look, you're in Bellator. This is the UFC. He's always going to have that going against him. But the one thing I'll applaud him is he says, yeah, okay, I realize what fans are going to say, what media is going to say, but I'm okay with it, A. And B, he made a lot of money that compensated and did stuff for his family. And I think that's what gives him the peace of mind.
Yeah, for sure. Those things are important too. Sometimes we forget that at the end of the day, these aren't just fighters. They're human beings.
Yeah. That same night, Patricio Pitbull Frady defended his belt, the featherweight title, against Jeremy Kennedy. That one kind of sucked because, for one, I like Pitbull. Two, though, Kennedy's from Extreme Couture, and I've seen him fight at PFL, UFC, Bellator, and he was really, really patient. He was well-deserving of this title shot. He got it. He had a moment in the fight, and then he got finished. That bummed me out a little bit, but that's the fight game. It's not like the NCAA tournament where, oh, they won and they lost, and maybe it was a buzzer beater and they're demoralized or they're, you know, hurt feelers or whatever you want to say, right? Mm-hmm. Bummed out. In fighting, you get lit up. And that's what happened to Kennedy at the end. He got lit up. See, the L's are a lot tougher to take. And there is no, like, man, we got out rebounded. The big guys didn't do their thing, or the guards were hitting their three, or we didn't play D as a team. The coach had a this and a that. No, man, it's kind of on you, you know? So luckily he's a pretty positive guy, but I was gutted for him. And congrats to Pitbull.
That's the thing, is like that particular fight, there's nothing you can point to, a controversy, nothing. Like, it was clear who the better man was. And that's probably a tough pill for Jeremy to have to swallow, just because he's made so many strides and he's constantly trying to improve. And for Pitbull, that's like a huge statement for me, because he's still showing you that he's got something there for people. And, you know, for how long, who knows? But I just love everything about his performance in that fight, the way he just kind of methodically picked Jeremy apart, you know, starting with that leg, that calf, just beating on it, slowing Jeremy down, and then waiting for his perfect moment to kind of come forward and capitalize. And when it showed up, he finally did. And, you know, Jeremy hung in there. You know, that was a barrage and a half that he had to kind of dodge.
Yeah.
But after a while, like, the one thing about mixed martial arts, you can do this in boxing. You can cover up, but because the gloves are so big and the area of attack is a lot smaller. But in mixed martial arts, you can't do that for too long, man. And I thought they gave Jeremy all the time he could possibly ask for, and then it was just too much. But great win for Pitbull.
I agree. Great stoppage by the ref. It was timely. And just like I was mentioning, I might have said this spinning back. Oh, no. Well, I guess right here on the Talbot Simon chat that we had early. Same thing. I love to give the refs their praise when they have the great stoppages, because they get buried. Them and the judges get buried when something doesn't go their way. And it's the MMA culture. Everyone complains and bitches and thinks they know it all or whatever. But these are really quality human beings and contributors to mixed martial arts who do great jobs week in and week out, man. They leave their families and go do this thing. It's a decent paying job, especially at a high level, but it's also not like Shane Otani money or anything like that, or Dana White money. I mean, you know, but they got to hop on these planes and do this thing, and they try it to the best of their ability. In fact, the reason I'm on this rant a little bit, I took a picture and I'll send it to you. Maybe I can send it to you as I'm talking. But seeing Chris Lieben cage side and some of the other guys, I would just love to ask Dana White, why are they situated in an octagon on the side where there's a door? Because the door cuts one of the sides in half. And to see them rubbernecking like this, like, let's say this mic right here is the panel. And to see them looking like this just so they can see the action is so stupid to me. Like, they should have the big panel free and clear so that they don't miss any of the action and they give you the best chance to judge the fight accordingly, right? In this instance, right. Is it Saldi Ahmad? I can't remember who the ref is or judge is, but they're rubbernecking not just around the panel, but around Herb as well. So I went back to it, paused it, and sent it. But it here it is. Okay, I'm going to send it to you via phone just so you can see it right quick. And yeah, and I'm like, dude, we got to be better than that. It's just not fair to the fighters, and it does look like it might be Sal. So I just sent it to you right now. Look at the panel right there. All right, and these guys aren't really fighting off to one side or anything like that, but he's got a rubberneck around that ESPN Plus panel. And then Herb happened to have just kind of come from the side that he was doing all this. Like, you can miss quality shots. Do you see it?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
You know, and so I realized that in an eight-sided octagon, you're going to have some areas that are free and clear. One of them is the corner. I wouldn't mind if the corner had to rubberneck or whatever. They're just shouting instructions, but I don't think their position is as important as the judges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what? A name that you brought up, Otani, he makes $656,000 per game. Imagine that's way more than probably some of the payouts for an entire roster of fights, you know, a night of fights for, say, Bellator or something like that.
Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So you can go, you know,
one night.
My toe hurts this game. I better sit this one out. I cut a little too deep, started bleeding, and I think it's just flaring up. And they'll go, oh, go in there, man. The trainers will sort you out, and they'll do whatever they need to do. Hopefully we got you ready for tomorrow. And guess what? He'll get paid. Whereas a fighter can be ready, do an eight-week camp, be ready to walk out, and they go, hey, your opponent just slipped on a banana peel. He can't go.
Yeah.
And so, oh, well, what about me? You know, you might get your show, but you're not going to get your show, your money, and the bonuses that you fight for. And that's if you get the show. I don't know. The UFC's mostly inconsistent. Usually, but if you weigh in and do it, I'll give them their due. You'll get your show, but you won't get the rest of what you thought. Now, you might get the fight in 4 weeks or 2 weeks if the other fighter wasn't hurt too bad. But that's the difference between where we are and where we need to get. And it's not like the UFC isn't successful. They are. They make money, but... Yeah, if you catch the replay of today's spinning back click, we were talking about the UFC antitrust lawsuit settlements, and you know, this was a great chance for fighters to speak up and improve their working conditions. They settled, and I'm not saying I blame them or anything, because this thing started a long time ago. Your lives changed. Maybe they just needed the money, but that is one sad reality every Saturday that I realize with the sport, man.
Did that happen in time for last show? Did we already react on that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, 30 days, right? We'll hear a little bit more on that, but it just leaves a little bit of a punch to the gut feeling. But nobody is going to be in this type of environment for this long, and then at the last minute decide, I'm just not feeling it. There's good reasons why they probably ended up where they did, and we're starting to see some of that come out. So we'll see more of it soon.
Yeah. You know, there's a few things that we know. There was the Kung Lee lawsuit and the Cajun Johnson lawsuit. And the Kung Lee, I think, is the bigger one of the two. So when you hear something about like 1,200 fighters approximately that fought between these years, something like 2010 to 2018, were eligible, you had to be born in the United States or from the United States or have fought in the United States. So a lot of fighters just get eliminated based off that. So it's not everyone that was eligible. And we've heard anything between 260,000 to 80,000 is what some of those fighters may get. Now, the 260,000 side, you know, if I'm Nate Quarry, I remember he always used to talk about his daughter. His daughter's probably like a teenager now, maybe going to college. Nate Quarry might be like, you know, I could use that money for college.
Mm-hmm.
if it's 80,000, 80, look, if someone told me, look, if you just agree to this, well, why are you 80? I might agree to it right now. It's, you just don't know, right? They, I'm sure, had the best intentions when all this started. They probably did feel slighted because of the oppressive conditions of the sport. And sometimes when you sign on the dotted line, and then look, there's the other side too, right? These are grown-ass men and women who either should have known better or knew better, because a lot of them were finally being represented by agents or managers. They knew what they were getting into. That's what they chose to do. They had the utmost confidence that they could probably never lose a fight and that they would cash in the big payday at some point. And then reality does bite you, right? So sometimes it's like, hey, you guys are no different than us. We agree to certain terms or whatever, and there's going to be good and there's going to be bad. So I don't know. I want to wait for more details. Like you said, 30 to 45 days, more details come in. Let's hear from more fighters as to why they agreed. Nate Quarry, if you're interested, was pretty, not detailed, but put out a statement on Reddit, you know, and he basically said some of the stuff we did. That's where we're getting it from.
Yeah,
and their intentions were different 10 years ago. Things have changed. They're not high-fiving each other, but at the same time, there was also risk involved as this thing went to trial. Go ahead, guys.
I heard that those guys, you know, the ones that were at the forefront of that, the Kung Lees, the Kajon Johnsons, the Nate Quarries, I think they get double, you know, whatever their winnings end up being from all this. Those guys are going to get double, and I think they deserve it. You know, they've had tons of meetings they've have to sit through, a lot of work, a lot of travel. They put themselves out there. I think they definitely deserve that, if not more. But those guys, if you are a former UFC fighter and this lawsuit does end up giving you something, please pick up your phone and at least give one of these guys a call and thank them for everything that they did for you.
John Fitch, Brandon Vera, Kung Lee, Cajun Johnson, Carlos Newton. There was quite a few of them that I would see throughout all the years. Some of them even went in to Washington, D.C. and spoke, you know, before hearings and stuff like that. So this thing was all over the place. But apparently, if they didn't agree now, they ran the risk of having to extend this thing by another 5 to 10 years, which could benefit them, right? Because you keep seeing $894 million to $1.6 billion. And if it went to trial and they won in a class action lawsuit, the awards are troubled, I guess. So now you're looking at what, 1.6? We'll just go on the higher end. That's almost $5 billion that this thing could have been worth. So yeah, that would have been substantially more than $335 million. But that's also not just chump change either. $335 million. So they could have possibly lost this, at trial. So. Mm-hmm. They just weighed their options and decided after all this time that they put in, this is what they're going to do. All right, but let's continue on here. Let me just give you some final results here on Bellator. Congrats again, Patricio Freire. I think it's his 8th title defense over Jeremy Kennedy. Congrats to Corey Anderson. And then Fabian Edwards is starting to make his case for another shot at Johnny Eblen. At some point, Leandro Higo defeated James Gallagher. I think those were some of the big names there that fought on that night. There is one name that sticks out, Ciarán Clarke Pry defeated Darius Maffei. What's the big deal about Ciarán Clarke? When Conor McGregor and some of his Irish buddies boarded a plane to go defend Artem Lobov, by the way, they're no longer homies. But when all went down, one of the guys that actually had to appear in court because he was one of the more malicious ones was that Ciarán Clarke guy. But he got a win. That's years behind us now. Since then, him and Habib, or McGregor and Habib, have already fought, but there was always this one Irish kid that was standing next to Connor. He had charges pressed against him as well by Brooklyn or New York or whatever. That was that guy. All right. And then the following night, we had the UFC. Rose Namajunas defeated Amanda Ribas in the main event and now is a title contender at flyweight. Look, maybe not as close as Manon Fiorot, who she lost to, or Erin Blanchfield. I'm not saying all that, but she carries a name in the sport. So you know the UFC is probably going to give her one more big name. And if she wins, I could see them trying to find a way to put her into title contention or into a title shot.
Yeah, I guess that was going to be my main question is, obviously first fight didn't go her way, but she had an out, right? The hand and the finger. This fight in particular, like, I guess how far can she go with this? Because Amanda Ribas is a tough out. Don't get me wrong. Tough out. But is she top level? I don't know, you know. So what does this win do for her? And then what can she do moving forward? I mean, can you imagine if she does get all the way up there, captures another title? Like, Rose is one of those forgotten females that when we're talking about their place in history, you have to kind of give her a little bit more credit than I think what she gets. And we'll see. It's very tough with her because at times she makes you believe that she's really into MMA and wants to be a champion and do things. And there's times where she kind of just lets you think like, maybe this isn't for me. It's like the weirdest thing, but it was a good performance. It was a solid performance. There were times where Amanda Ribas had good moments too, you know, but overall good performance for Rose.
She was in that bus, by the way, that got ransacked by McGregor and his buddies. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the ones that seemed like it affected her the most. Kiesa, I think, was another one.
She got glass in her eye or something like that, or
something like that. Yeah, a few of them had, or that might have been Kiesa. I can't remember, but she, I don't know if that started it or if she kind of would have a little bit of that anxiety. I think this incident definitely contributed to it. I'm not trying to be MMA historians here or anything, but it just seems like an appropriate time to connect dots just because it got brought up. So we'll see. We'll see what happens to her. Carl Williams defeated Justin Taffa. He looked like he was on his way to get his butt kicked, but his chin held up. He turned things around with the wrestling. Edmund Shabazian, he looked like he was going to get lit up by AJ Dobson, but he rallied. He got a win. Huge. So Carl Williams and Edmund Shabazian both train at Extreme Couture. So even though things didn't go well for Kennedy the night before, these two, along with Julian Arosa, they gave Extreme Couture a 3-0 night at the UFC. Peyton Talbot, who'll be a guest of ours in just a sec, defeated Cameron Simon. I really enjoyed that fight. Yusuf Zalal defeated Billy Q. Billy Quarantillo submitted him. Fernando Padilla defeated Luis Pajuelo. That was Mexico against Peru. Let me tell you something. That Mexican kid goes, Padilla, he looks like a force, man. He's just got good size, and he looks pretty vicious.
And he was fun on the mic, too, afterwards and in the press conference.
Yeah, no doubt. Trey Ogden got past Kurt Hollibaugh. The takedowns, Hollibaugh just couldn't stop him. Ogden looked like he was tired, though. Arosa, like I said, submitted Ricardo Ramos. Miles Jones defeated Cody Gibson. And a few more names down below. Let me just skip down to Nick Parkin defeated Muhammad Usman. That's Kamaru Usman's younger brother. And Andre Lima defeated Igor Severino via DQ for getting bit. He also took home the bite of the night bonus, $50,000. Fight of the night went to Jarno Ahrens versus Steve Wynn. Performance of the night went to Peyton Talbot and Fernando Padilla.
The bite was absolutely unfortunate. It's not the first time we've ever seen this happen in mixed martial arts. Wes Sims, he had some bite marks on him before, I remember. But this was just, this was really, really bad. I mean, you could clearly see it. That was a female fight too, not that long ago, I think, where there was something like this, but this was just way above and beyond what you expect out of a fight. You know, it's just stupid. But to him get the tattoo so quick, I thought that was kind of creative, and I thought that was actually kind of cool.
I've linked into the story and I got to read about it, but yeah, it looks like Junkie put something out about it. So I'm interested to see what that's all about. I was going to say something. Oh, did we ever put to rest? Did Ronda Rousey bite Liz Carmouche? Did we ask Liz that in an interview about a year ago? Or has anyone ever talked about that when she was in that choke?
Yeah, I think she did say yeah, but I'd hate to put that out there and not be right. So I don't know, but that does sound familiar.
So there's been a few biting incidents. Nothing as famous as, obviously, Mike Tyson's. That's probably the most famous one, but
yeah, I mean, he's clearly taking
that cost him $2-3 million. That's why I was interested to see how Dana would talk about the biting incident. You know, like, is he disgusted by it? I would never want to be around someone like that because, hey, your pal Mike did that once. Mike Tyson definitely has a long leash in life. He's paid his dues for some stuff that he's done or whatever. But yeah, I always like to pay attention when stuff like this goes down in sports, just to see if that energy's kept up across the board.
Well, not to mention too, oh my God, I'm forgetting his name, but remember, he not only bit an ear off, he swallowed it.
Oh yeah, Marcus Davis.
Yeah, there you go.
I was in a street fight though when he was little, right? Yeah. I think he said he stuck his tongue out and showed him the lobe or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so did didn't Teddy Atlas not Teddy Atlas, Freddie Roach have an incident where he bit.
He told us a story. Teddy Atlas did something to somebody's eye, I think, or something like that. Freddie Roach, I think, yeah, did something pretty bad.
All right. Let's talk to our guest, Peyton Talbot. He is coming off a win in the lightweight division over Cameron Simon. He's now 8-0. He's solid, folks. You got to keep your eye on him. I'm telling you, I think this guy's got a pretty bright future. The fight ended in the second round via TKO strikes. Sorry, bantamweight's not lightweight. And we'll be right back with Peyton Talbot. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz are back with another superstar in the sport of mixed martial arts. Today we get to talk to Peyton Talbot, coming off a huge win at UFC Fight Night this past Saturday in Las Vegas. That fight card headlined by Rose Namajunas and Amanda Ribas. But on that same card, Peyton Talbot and Cameron Simon went to war. They cracked on each other pretty good. This man right here, though, is the winner, stays undefeated. How you doing, Peyton?
Good. Finally got some good sleep after the fight. I didn't sleep for like 2 days.
Why don't you get good sleep? Stress? So the fight or anxiety?
No, I just I slept before the fight, but after I went out with all my friends and I had a flight early in the morning and I like adrenaline's still high, you're stuffing your face, so it's just hard to sleep.
I got you. So more just from enjoying the fruits of your labor.
Exactly.
Where'd you go clubbing? We're from Vegas, so tell us where'd you guys get down at?
I don't know. I'm not really from Vegas, so I don't know the names. But we went out and had a good time.
Nightclubs or were tops coming off? Tournament Rhino, where were you headed?
Just nightclubs. And I went out with Carl Williams, too. I think he fought that night. Yeah. Had a good time.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, well, actually, what happens in Vegas is supposed to stay in Vegas. So no harm, no foul, no worries. Listen, bro, there's no reason why a 54-year-old dude like me should be a fan of a 25-year-old young fella like you. That just doesn't happen. You'll realize this when you're on my age. You kind of go by the players, the athletes that you grew up, right, watching, who are now far retired and stuff like that. But dude, I'm your fan, man. I love the way you fight. I mean, I seriously love the way you get down. You have an arsenal of striking ability, right? Knees, kicks, punches, everything. You got a great jaw. You go after it. I wish more fighters were like you. And I also want to give your opponent props too. I thought he cracked you a few times too. Maybe I'm off on that one. I don't know, but I really enjoyed your fight. I wish you guys would have got fight in the night too.
Yeah. I don't know if I didn't really feel like I took any damage. I think he cracked me like once or twice with a jab. And, other than that, I didn't really feel much on his strikes, like his kicks. I think he strikes very hard when he's comfortable, but I was doing a good job of keeping him on his back foot. And because of that, I think it took a lot of the pop off of his shots. So I didn't really feel too much in there.
Am I often saying maybe you're obviously still young. You're going to get better. I can tell you have a high ceiling. But are you maybe like as your striking coach told you, maybe that chin's just staying out a little bit longer when you are kind of in those firefights? That's the only thing I could really say he needs to improve a little bit in this certain area. Because other than that, you are ticking boxes.
Yeah, that's always everybody's critique on me. Like, my offense is on point and my output is good. But it's always just the one thing that you can always get better at is defense, because defense is king. It'll keep you in the game longer and it'll keep your brain healthy when you're done with fighting. So they're right. I do leave my chin out there a little bit, but all of the greats break one rule. So
yeah, Nice, true, man. It's hard to find the perfect fighter. That's true. Where do you feel like you're at so far? Is this when you started your journey in mixed martial arts at the age you're at now? You're undefeated. Is that, do you feel like you're ahead of schedule, behind schedule, or on schedule?
I feel like I'm on schedule. Cameron was a big jump up in ranking and competition level, on paper at least. I didn't think it was anything that I hadn't seen before. I fought, you know, nothing but like killers since my pro debut. I think pretty much like a lot of my fights, I've been the only person to hand my opponents their loss. So there's nothing new for me, but it'll be interesting to see where they put me in the rankings, because I think Cameron was in the 40s and I was like near 80 before that fight or something. So
you even worried about titles and contendership, or like, do you still feel like there's a lot of growing to do before you get there, or would you like a faster route? Because that's usually what comes with the territory of an undefeated fighter. All of a sudden, you know, you're graded on a different curve.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's a lot to learn, but I do think I'm a fast learner. I want a fast, you know, shot to where I should be, like in ranking. I don't want a fast shot to the title. I just want a fast shot to the ranking that I think I deserve to fight in. And me and my management company will do some discussing and think about who we want to fight next. But I've only been pro for less than 2.5 years, so I have a lot to learn. And the fact that I'm young, I think, is on my side.
Yeah, that's something that I was going to kind of ask you to roughly know where your mindset is. And I think it's okay with saying this, but like, when you look at the champion, especially in this division, right? This division's so stacked. Do you feel like today you got something for him right now? Or do you feel like this is kind of a work in progress for you to get to that point?
It's always going to be a work in progress. I think if I were to fight him right now, I'd have some things that would pose a threat to him. But I'd have a lot to improve on and a lot to learn on to get to that point. And I think by the time I'm, you know, 27, 28, I'm going to be really, really hard to come up with a game plan against. I think I already am. But, just small improvements every day is always going to be the name of the game.
Is there a certain limit to having a win streak and not getting a title shot? Like, I know you want to do it based on how comfortable you feel, but if the numbers just keep going and keep going, is there a point where, you know, sometimes we talk to fighters and they can have up to 8, 9, 10 fights and they're like, man, I still haven't gotten a title shot. Like, do you have your limit on that?
No. I mean, I'm sure once I get to that point, I'll feel a little bit different, but like the title will come if you're doing your job and you're doing what you're supposed to do and the UFC likes you. Like, you shouldn't have to beg for the title. You should never have to beg for views. You should never have to beg for subscriptions. Like, everything, you just plant the seed and the fruits of labor will come, I think, with time. So getting hung up on that is just a distraction that I don't think I need.
Fighters can sometimes be their own worst critics, right? For this past performance, from our eyes, it looked almost flawless, man. You had really good moments in that fight, and we look at you now and there's not too much, you seem fine. Were there things that bothered you about the fight? Were there things that you feel like need to be improved?
Kind of hard to say from just 6 minutes of action. I think if the fight would have went on a little bit longer, it would have been nice to see how I, you know, mixed in being a whole MMA fighter. I think I would have liked to, you know, just use my wrestling just to get, you know, some reps in a competition. But I don't know if there was really much to improve on. I think I, given my forward pressure and how the fight went, I think it was, you know, not too much to improve on.
Where are the gyms that you train at? Like, what's the circuit that you do?
So I live out here in Reno, and my gym is called Reno Academy of Combat. So that's where I mainly train. And then every once in a while, I'll go over the hill to Sacramento to train with Alpha Male and MMA Gold. I intend to go to Vegas to use the resources at the PI a little bit in the coming months. So,
okay. If somebody follows you on social media, they would see what I see and what a few comments that I saw on some of your posts. you seem to be pretty athletic dude that's good at a lot of stuff. I see you, you know, on the skateboard, in the ocean, football, wrestling. And so here's another thing I wanted to ask you. So you know Fluffy Hernandez, right?
Yeah, that's my boy. I like him a lot.
That dude knows nothing about MMA when it comes to, hey, who's fighting this weekend? Like, you know, he doesn't follow the sport. He just wants to know when he's fighting, and that's it. Well, at least that's what he told us a few years ago. Maybe he's come around. I don't know. Donald Cerrone was the same way as well. They're so busy doing so many things that they don't get caught up in it. And then there's guys like Billy Quarantillo. He was just on your fight card. Jeremy Kennedy, he just fought in Bellator. Dying. These dudes know everything about their division and a lot about the sport. Where do you sit? I feel like you're more on the Fluffy and Cerrone side. Like, you got so many things going on, you just ain't got time to worry about MMA.
Yeah, that's, I mean, people think it's ridiculous that I say I like don't know who to call out, but we're liking that way. I don't really watch unless it's my favorites. You know, if Anthony's fighting, I'm gonna watch. If Andre Feely's fighting, I'm gonna watch. Like, a lot of my favorites and like the guys that I'm close with and know, I'll always tune in for, or I'll look at the highlights. But yeah, I don't know. There's events like almost every weekend, and it just feels watered down to me at times. Nothing against the UFC, but I just would rather be doing other things than studying tape and getting burned out on fighting.
Yeah, I can't blame you. I mean, even hardcore MMA fans like us, and it's our job, it's just hard to really, really get into it, you know, because there's so much of it. And PFL is about to start. So they got Bellator's got their own series under the PFL banner. PFL, the occasional one championship card, throwing bare knuckle. Oh my God, it's a mess. What are your other things that you like to do aside from training to be or being a prize fighter?
What you see on my Instagram is the stuff I like doing. I'm going to be skating this week. I'm actually going to SLS next weekend for that Street League skate competition just to hang out. I've been DJing lately and trying to pick that up. I'll just sit for hours with my controller and just like, you know, zone out to stuff that I make. And been playing some Dark Souls 2, which is the worst game in the franchise, and I hate it, but, you know, it's just something I got to go through. I played every single other one other than Dark Souls 2. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing.
What do you DJ? What kind of music?
I've been doing mainly, like, deep house, trance, some techno stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is it available to hear somewhere, like a YouTube channel or Twitch or something like that?
Nah, not yet. Not yet. I'm like my own worst critic, so I'm gonna keep doing it until I get really good, and then I'll probably share some stuff on my YouTube or maybe go on like TikTok Live.
You got skills?
Yeah, I like what I hear. But you know, it's one of those things you gotta really like refine the transitions, and everything's gotta look smooth from start to finish to for me, at least, to feel like I want to share. So,
you want to know who else can DJ house music?
Who?
You'd probably never guess if you ever run into him. Michael Bisping.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you ever run into him, talk to him about it. He gets on the ones and twos and cuts it up.
Yeah, you guys should plug me with him. Maybe we could do a little help each other out, something like that. That would be
cool. Yeah. No, he probably talks MMA most of his life, but a lot of people like to talk about other stuff. But yeah, he's kind of like what you said, deep house and trance, and so he used to do that more when he was younger, but he's occasionally done it in Southern California.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a trip. And guess who else is a psychology major? Now, are you done, by the way, or are you still studying, or?
Yeah, no, I graduated 2 years ago.
Okay, this guy, he's psych major as well.
Yeah, what specialty?
But you're not going to like this, UNLV. yeah.
Nasty.
And yeah, you're in Nevada, Reno, right? UNR?
Yeah, I went to UNR.
Okay. All right.
We literally last night had a game, so you know what we were chanting. So we'll put that to the side.
He asked you who won, goes.
UNLV.
Oh, really? In basketball?
Yeah, NIT tournament. I know.
Damn. But damn.
Yeah. No, you know, I was going to say this, but I don't want to darken the mood. And in fact, this might be before your time, but did you ever hear of a guy named Phil Baroni, the New York Badass?
That's rings a bell. Sounds familiar.
Yeah, he was early days UFC, real popular guy, and he got in some trouble a few years ago down in Mexico. There were allegations, but I guess he may have taken his girlfriend's life. But he was also psychology major. But the point was more, it's incredible. Fighters just wouldn't be pegged for certain majors, you know, especially him. If you got to know him, he was the last thing. He was probably the last guy you'd want to sit down and go, yeah, man, I got some problems, you know. But yeah, there's a few of them out there as well. So MMA is a fascinating world where the people you least expect to kind of have the same likes as you do, they actually are out there.
Yeah, it is one of those sports where there's a lot of room for individual freedom and variety. I think like MMA is a very psychological sport, as well as like golf. And I think golf is extremely psychological, but there's games like football where you're like 90% IQ and body composition. Mm-hmm. And I just think, you know, fighting is, it doesn't really matter what your body is shaped like. I think your mindset takes you the farthest.
Yeah. Your mom's a plastic surgeon, I heard.
She is. Yes.
Wow. Very impressive. Yeah, now, is this one of those like, what's the specialty? I guess just the face or other stuff, or, and I won't go past the channel where someone will come in and go, look what they did to me, and then those two doctors go in and fix it all. Is that kind of what your mom does?
Yeah, she she's well versed in everything. She did general surgery for a long time in the hospital, but she does a mean boob job and does some really good reconstructive work. I've seen her do some incredible things on people, like people that have been extremely mutilated and torn apart. She has made them look like pretty normal. So,
oh, no shit.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dana White always says when some of the athletes get really messed up, he'd rather send them to a plastic surgeon than to just a doctor to reconstruct, you know, because they're so much more talented and things like that.
Totally. My mom actually was at the last event and she told all the staff there, like, hey, I know you guys have a guy for stitches, but if you ever need a plastic surgeon or somebody that's like a little bit more skilled with like the aesthetics, like, please let me know. So we might see her stitching up my opponents next time.
That'd be cool. Yeah. I know that I know that he's said this more with the female athletes than the male athletes. You know, a lot of the male athletes are like, it is what it is or whatever. Look at Dustin Poirier, his beak's going that way. But that's just a badge of honor, you know. But yeah, no, that's cool that your mom offered that, because I think it's probably the best bet for a lot of athletes is just go with a plastic surgeon, man. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're skilled for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, listen, it's great to know you. You're real humble. Because you got some badass skills and I see a bright future for you. So keep doing your thing. And this, you're in a division that's just popping with talent. You still got some OGs out there that are doing their thing. And then you got some rivalries. You got some bright stars. I think for a while, the bantamweights were out knocking out the featherweights. Something about 135, dude. I don't know what it is about the water or whatever, but it's been my favorite division for like the last couple years. But it's great to have another rising talent like yourself.
Yeah, it's the body composition. Like, our bodies only allow enough muscle distribution in relation to like our size. Like, we're some of the best athletes because we have to use great technique. We can't rely on our muscle. I think that's the reason.
That could be it. Yeah. Peyton, thanks, man, for the time. Good luck with your time off and enjoy it. And then hopefully we can talk to you before your next fight.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you. Take care, man. Yeah, I love this division. And this is a good addition, both of these guys. Like I said, interesting to see that this guy just, if you go on his Instagram, he just looks like he's a great athlete, man.
Yeah, I think he's athletic. And I like that he has a good head on his shoulders, and you know, his management is always pretty good about like just the attention they give to fighters. And I think this guy's a little diamond in the rough. I think he's going to turn into something pretty big.
So do I. All right. Look, we've covered a lot of the major news on spinning back clicks. So I don't want to like shove more of this down your guys' throats. I really encourage you guys to check it out. Now, if you tell me I'm not a YouTuber, I just like podcasts. Well, spinning back click is available on podcast form here on Omni or wherever you may grab your podcasts, right? You can grab them at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. And so you can listen to it that way as well. But yeah, on Spinning Backlick, we discuss McGregor. And it's tough, folks. He's so popular. A lot of people don't like hearing about his potential return, but a lot of people do. They click the stories. We listen to the audience. All I can tell you is this does sound like they're a lot closer than ever before, and we will see him this summer. But, man, it's a damn shame that Michael Chandler hasn't fought in 18 months. McGregor hasn't fought in over 3 years, I believe. So the fight won't suck, that's for sure, but it just doesn't have the impact it would have had we done it a few years back or coming off the season of The Ultimate Fighter. That's when it should have been done.
Frustrating, huh?
Yeah, and then as far as Ronda Rousey's concerned, it's another thing we discussed. I think I've shared this on this show before, but Ronda used to be really good with kids and autographs. And outside the MGM, she declined a kid who had a Ronda Rousey shirt. There was no other people around. So it's not like once you sign here or take a picture here, the doors are open and now you're stuck for 2 hours doing it. Nope. Some kid just happened to be walking in the right area at the right time, saw her. She got on down to his size, kind of squatted down like a catcher and just said, "Hey, listen, I'm just not doing that right now, but thank you for being a fan." But she didn't sign anything or take a picture. And I just thought, dude, come on, man. Seriously, like what kind of a state are you in that you turn down a fan like that and break their heart? And so I don't know, man. I'm going to read her book. It's The Job, but I don't know. Maybe the concussions might lead to other unhappiness in her life goes, but I'm telling you, it was pride, ego, and social media that she just didn't know how to cope with it. And so when she got pushback and the fans weren't there for her, she just fell off the cliff.
There was a lot of ego. And you know what the worst? I've actually seen fighters do that before and not give the benefit of saying, "Listen, thank you for this, but I'm not doing it." Like, I've seen fighters just not do that at all. So it can be even worse, but
you've seen that happen to fighters who could have gone swarmed in that situation. That's, I think, what they were trying to avoid at that time, right?
Yeah, I've seen it in both situations, you know, like a little bit off to the side and they just completely blow people off. That part sucks. But when it's little kids, it's different, you know, hits mm-hmm. different.
Yeah. Folks, we're going to get on out of here. Thank you so much for tuning into our first show of the week. We will be back with you guys on Thursday. And thank you, as always, for your support of the show. We're nearing, in a few weeks, 17-year anniversary of the beginnings of MMA Junkie Radio. So we never want to take that for granted. Again, we appreciate your support. We'll catch you on the next one. Go out and be a champion. Talk to you soon.